Today let's discuss an interesting topic that's quite relevant, quite common, about borrowing people's possessions, items, objects, when you don't have permission. So there are really two questions before looking into the Gemara and the Rishonim. There are really two questions that we have to ask. One question is, when you borrow something from someone without knowing what he would say, just simply shol lo midas, you borrow without asking, even though you plan to return it. And then there's the secondary question, which is what we're going to, we learned this week, was borrowing when you know that he won't mind, but you didn't ask him. So the first question is borrowing from someone without asking. You don't know what he would say. But I plan to use something, and I want to return it to him. So he won't lose anything. I'm not going to cause any damage. He won't know about it. But I'm still using his object. Is there any violation? And the halacha is that it's certainly prohibited from doing so, but there is a machlokas in the Gemara, Gemara Bava Basra, between the Chacham and the Rabbi Yehuda, what the status of a person is who's shol shelo midas. A person who borrows without asking permission, he doesn't know what he's going to say. It's completely neutral. You don't know if it'll be yes, you don't know if it'll be no. What's the status of such a person? And the Gemara has a machlokas that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the din would be that it's might be a problem to do so, but he wouldn't be considered a gazlan. It's the wrong thing to do, but it's not a gazlan. While the Chachamim say that no, such a person would actually be called a gazlan. When a person takes something without permission, it's a gazlan. Even though I plan to return it, that's called gzeila. So that's how the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, all paskin that shol shelo midas is considered a gazlan.
Is this including all things like we used food in the Gemara, but like things like a sefer where nothing has been lost?
Right. So we have to get to the question of mitzvahs. Mitzvahs might be different. Right now we're talking just using people's objects that are not for the purposes of mitzvahs.
Even though a mitzvah is like a book, a secular book.
If there's no mitzvah involved, we'll get to mitzvah. But right now, no mitzvahs. If you borrow something without asking permission from someone, that would be shalol shlomidas, borrowing without permission, and that would be considered a gazlan. You'd be considered a violating gzeila at that point. Now, we have to get to a certain situation. Let's say there's implicit permission. You grew up in your parents' house. You have to ask every single time. You take a drink of water, you take some orange juice, you take some cookies. At what point is there considered enough permission? Do your parents have to tell you one day that everything you take from this point on is all yours? But we're talking about a situation where it's not a family member, where it's not a person who has granted you permission in the past. It's simply you, you might even know the guy, but you see there's a book lying around. It's an English book on whatever book you're reading. Would that be considered a problem? And the answer is yes, that would be considered, you would be considered a gazlan in that case. Now, even though such a person would be called a gazlan, one who's shol shelo midas, there is a discussion in the Achronim whether or not you violated the Isser of Lo Sigzo. It's possible to be a gazlan without violating Lo Sigzo. That's a possibility. So there is a chiddush that Marid Agazi talks about, that when the Gemara calls such a person who's shol shelo midas, we call him a gazlan, it's lav gazlan mamish. He's not really a gazlan. It's like a gazlan. He really hasn't violated Lo Sigzo. It's just an inappropriate thing to do. He's not possible to aid this. He hasn't violated an iser. So that's Marid Agazi's chiddush. But the most poskim assume that such a person is called a gazlan and he violated an issur d'oraisa of Lo Sigzo, of borrowing without permission. There's just a few examples. There's a very nice book here of Rav Yisrael Pinchas Badner, Halachas of Other People's Money. He just brings some real practical cases just to bring it to life a little bit. What's shoel shelo midas? So, one case, what about borrowing someone's property? Is borrowing property, is that considered a violation? Parking in someone's driveway, parking in someone's parking spot. Would that be a violation of gzela? So normally we say karka einun gzela. So you can't steal karka. But that being said, they quote from a Rashbam that one who does use someone else's property, even though there's no gzela, there's no returning it back because it's always here. I can't steal your property away. Your house isn't moving anywhere. Still, it's considered a violation of gzela to take a person's parking spot, to take a person's driveway, to go on a person's property without permission. All these things are examples of a Lo Sigzo.
What about Zenele Vezelo Chaser?
So that could still, you might not owe any money for that case, but in the end of the day, a person is makbid on, if I'm makbid on my property being used, that would be against my will. You can't forcibly use something in my property even though I'm not losing out. That's, I can't just take your jacket and start wearing it around. You'd be makbid if I wore your jacket. Zelo Chaser.
It seems like there is a discussion there, like to borrow books.
We'll get through that. Chavrusas talk with each other.
You can be very makbid.
Right.
But the only reason why they say it's usher is because, like, you might be.
That's not the only reason. One of the reasons is that you might ruin and damage his property. That's one. Right. But the other thing, if a guy is not makbid.
Right.
But if the guy is makbid, even though nothing's going to get ruined, so that's my property. You have no right to take my stuff.
So if you don't know if he's makbid or not, can you invoke Zenan of his Elochaser?
So that's what we're trying to build up to this point. Right now, with a guy, you don't know anybody. You have no idea. And since if a person's vade makbid, it's a violation to use his driveway, to use his parking spot. We'll get to a point where we're not sure. Yeah.
Would that apply, like today? Many people even rent out their parking spots. So there's no damage to the spot, but if you're using his spot, it means he can't be charging somebody else, even if he's not. Would that still be considered low lesser?
No, you're taking a guy's money. That would be a violation. That's the Gemara talks about a situation. If I squat in your land, so I'm gaining, but I don't cause any loss, and you wouldn't rent it out anyways, so then you're not losing anything. But if you normally rent it out and some guy says, oh, I see it's no longer vacant because someone's living there, you're losing out on some rent. That would be certainly a chaser. So other examples, they say walking through a person's property, cutting through as a shortcut. Would that be a violation? So they point out here, they quote from the poskim here, that the Shulchan Aruch himself actually says, cutting through a person's property, just running through, that would not be a violation of stealing someone's property. Unless you know the person is for sure a makbid, then it would be considered a violation. The guy puts up a fence and he puts locks up and he has signs, no trespassing, all that would be violation. If people don't know any better, if he hasn't said anything, you are allowed to use as a shortcut. As long as you don't damage his property, you can't look into his windows and start. Let's just go through, heads down, and go across. But if a person is damaging the property, that would be a violation.
What's the other example? What is the other when
you're using the property? Lo sigzel? Yeah, so they talk about, as we said, shol shlomidas, borrowing an object would be most likely lo sigzel. So the same thing would be in effect when it comes to karka as well. Even though you can't actually steal property because it's not movable, you can't move it out of the way, still vis-a-vis the gazlan, he has violated lo sigzel. You can have a lo sigzel without a requirement of returning anything because there's nothing to return. But it still would be a violation. And if there's damage, so we spoke about in the past when you damage someone's property, what is the violation? Is there an isser when damaging property? So most Rishonim understand that there is an isser. What is the source of such an isser? There's no pasuk that says lo mazik, lo sadzik someone's property. But they point to various sources that might be an extension of Hezek. So Lo Sigzel, the Rabbeinu Yonah, the beginning of Pirkei Avos, says Lo Sigzel is a source of all Nezikin as well. So it's Mestama under the rubric of Lo Sigzel. Now,
Zenen of Zelochaser, is it fair to say that that's a Dine Mominus and versus Surim? Meaning, I think that's what you had said initially as a response.
That Zenem Zelochaser, if that's a violation of what again?
I'm saying that's Dine Mominus.
Correct.
Whether you're allowed to or not is one thing, and then whether you owe money or not is another thing.
Correct. We always have to distinguish between the violation, the Isser at play, and then the requirement to return something. So, Karka and Nigzelus is a great example where there's an Isser Lo Sigzel, but there's no Chiv Tashlumin because there's nothing to return. The Tos at the beginning of Meruba points out that there is gzela, an iser by karka, but there's just no tashlumin to pay. So you can't have those cases. So by zen nenev zolah chaser, when a person does violate that, there's two things. There's one, there's an iser of misusing a person's property, of lo sigzel, and then also, if there's a loss of money, there'd also be a requirement to pay. That's the question you always have to ask.
Well, in American law, you could get fined for trespassing, though.
That's fine, but that's American law. But there's actually a discussion. Let's say, if a person violates the law but doesn't violate halacha, he violates dina de malchus adina, but doesn't violate lo sigzel. Let's say a person double parks. So double parking is not lo sigzel. I didn't take anyone's spot because no one's allowed to park in the double parking. But you still have violated dina de malchus adina. Anytime you violate any laws of the government, that's a dina de malchus adina, but not lo sigzel unless you're taking someone's property, someone's right. It's actually interesting, the quote from Rabbi Yashiv in terms of parking, double parking. Let's say I see a guy who constantly double parks. You go down Central Avenue, it's the same big SUV that's double parking. My mother-in-law has this great story. She was once in the bagel store, and there's like a long, long line, and she's waiting, and finally she gets to her time to order. From lady runs in, she goes right to my mother-in-law, she's like, I'm sorry, can I go in front of you? I double parked outside. So, so the people who drive, who you know, think they own Central Avenue, they think they own whatever they want. So, if you see a person who's actually doing this on somewhat of a regular basis, Rav Yashiv says you could call the cops on that person. It's not a violation of Moser, because the person at worst would get a fine. You're not going to be sent to jail. There's an issue of being Moser, a person, to jail. You're not going to jail for without parking, but you'll teach them a lesson. So he says, yes, if you see it a couple times, feel free to call. But some say, careful, because once you start calling the cops on an affirmed Jew, who knows what else you'll call them about. So be very, very careful how to apply this to other other examples. Okay, so let's talk about our situation right now. We were talking up until now, just the examples to get it a little bit moving, about borrowing something without permission. You don't know what the person's going to say, and if there's going to be a hakpada, if the owner will care about using his parking spot, using his possessions, it would be a violation of lo sigzal. But now we're talking about a situation where we got to is where the person didn't give you explicit permission, but you know that he won't mind anyways. Knowing the person or knowing the item that you're using, he wouldn't really mind. Is that going to be allowed or not allowed? So this really starts off in the Gemara Bava Metzia. I'm not sure if anyone saw the Gemara inside. It wasn't in the Maror Mekomos, but the Tosas was. But the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Chav Beis Amun Aleph says, at one time, Amemar, Marzutra, and Rav Ashi, these three Amorim were Ikloi Lebustana de Maribar Isak. They were visiting the Pardes, the orchard of Maribar Isak. And the sharecropper, one of Maribar Isak's sharecropper's workers, brought them some dates and some pomegranates and gave them to the big Rabbanim to eat. So Amemar Rav Ashi had no problem eating it. The sharecropper, you know, he has a certain chelek, he has a certain portion of the produce. That's how a sharecropper works. He works for a percentage of the produce. So he gave some of his own produce. So Mar Zutra and Rav Ashi ate it. But however, in fact, rather, Maimar and Rav Ashi ate it. Mar Zutra refused to eat the food. Later on, the owner of the property came and said to the sharecropper, why did you give him these fruit? You shouldn't give him the much better fruit. These are Chashi Rabbanim. Why the small grapes? Give them the big grapes, the big dates, the big pomegranates. And so they said, oh, you see, Mar Zutra, the owner was very happy with us getting. You should have taken to eat also. And Mar Zutra says, no, he didn't really mean it. He said, Mishim Kisufa, he was embarrassed that, I didn't really want to give it to them, but he had no choice. After it was given, he had to accept that it was given. But Meikara, initially, who says that the owner wanted to give the fruit? It wasn't the sharecroppers to own. So Tosis says, we see from here, he asks the question from another Gemara Baba Kama, but he ends up saying that we paskin yishalomidas, that the person, if I find the property or some type of wallet or something on the floor, that the owner eventually gives up hope of finding. There's no way he'll find it. There's no simon. He lost it in a big public area. So the din is, in the end of the day, if I found out he was miyavish first, so then I could pick it up. If I pick it up first, and then I find out that he's miyavish after the fact, that's yish shalomidas. And that you can't pick up, because initially when it came to my possession, he didn't know about it. Initially, he wasn't miyayish on it. And Meikara came to my possession as a Davar Isser, so therefore Tosas writes that here as well, the owner didn't know it was given to me. He only found out about it after the fact. Oh, then he had to say, okay, I'm miyayish. I can't take it out of there. They ate it already. I was very happy now, but before, and who says that was the case? So from that, Tosas says that a person who ends up eating someone else's property, you should not eat it until the owner actually gives you a particular, direct, explicit permission. That's the din from Tosos. You need permission. You can't eat something without permission. That's where, and use any property without any permission. That's the din from Tosos. And Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Baal Tanya says this clearly. Afilu barlo lichshiyodei lebailav. Even if you know that when the owner will find out about it, he'll as yismuchu v'yagilu mipnei ha'avasim. He's going to be so happy and elated that you ate from his stuff. It's still aser lehanos bo below das abam. You cannot, you go to your host's house. And he's not there yet. You've been there before. You go into the property, start raiding the kitchen. That would be awesome until you have explicit permission from him. That's the din of the Shulchan Aruch Harav and Tosfos as well in Bava Metzia.
Excuse me, Rabbi. When we read this a different way. We read it whether it was a question of the sharecropper was taking it out of his own stuff or taking it out of the Balabas's stuff. And especially when we talk about the better stuff compared to the worse stuff, I thought that concludes that he was taking it out of his stuff and not out of the Balabas. Isn't that That's how we were reading it and learning it.
Right. Okay, that's fine.
It's not in there?
That's part of the discussion of who was the sharecropper taking from. Was he taking from his own property or was he taking from the owner's property? That's part of the discussion. In the end of the day, it's felt that the sharecropper doesn't get it until the owner actually gives it to the sharecropper. The sharecropper has no right to take it on his own, but whatever was given. And since the owner was not there yet, the owner had not yet given it to him, and therefore it wasn't the sharecropper's right to give it to the rabbis.
Would this include also if you know, not only that he'd be happy, but he'd be upset. How should he be upset you didn't take food from him? You were sitting there for an hour in his house and you didn't take
It could be. So it's unclear what to know. You know, how do you know when there's permission? Obviously, you know, if he told you could take it, that's fine. Now, what if you've been there in the past? This is a regular guest you go to. And, you know, in the past he had no problem with saying this. So then what should you do? Or sometimes you go to a host and that they feel like they have to offer you everything, but, you know, they really don't want to offer you everything. So how honest, you know, some hosts are very good and gracious. Some hosts are like, take whatever you want. I never really know if they really want me to take anything they want. They don't want me to, you know, raid out the whole kitchen and take the whole. So, but let's say I ate the whole pantry. Would the wife really be that happy that I ate everything in the pantry? Who knows? So it's very hard to know. You have to, each case really requires a lot of common sense and understanding this situation. Obviously, in your own home where you grew up, you don't have to ask permission. You know, I go back to my parents' house in Teaneck. I don't have to ask at my age now, oh, could I have, some drink of water? I don't have to ask that question. That is understood. Some of it requires common sense, and you have to understand boundaries, of course. You know, whenever I go to someone's house as a guest, I'm not going to raid the kitchen. They could give me all the things I want. I'm very uncomfortable to go into the refrigerator. You know, I was in Boca in January for a week, so a very gracious host. Really, they're real smart. I'm smart. I know how to host very nicely. Whatever I want. But I did not go in. I did not open the fridge one time. When I wanted to get something, I'd ask them each time. I was very uncomfortable doing that. So certain people have certain how shy they are, how forthcoming they might be, and it depends on the relationship, each situation. So it's hard to give just answers in each circumstance. But according to the Tosfos and Shulchan Aruch Rav, unless you have been given explicit permission, it would not be allowed. Now here comes the Shach, though. The Shach writes that had it not been for the Tosfos saying this, Vilu lav demistafina, had I not been scared to argue in Tosfos, that line is a way the Achronim say that sometimes we show them as well. I think I would say otherwise, but I'm not comfortable actually saying otherwise because it's the Tosfos. So the Shach says that you can't compare the case of using someone's property to the case of Yishlom Adas. He says as follows. He says, I would have thought that you can take from your friend's property had you known he would like it. You knew, right now he didn't say a thing, but you know, we go back, 35 years. If I'm in my friend's house, he would certainly let me have his apples. I know that's for sure, but he never told me. So the Shach says that's completely different than the case of Yish Shlom Idas. Why? Because Yish Shlom Idas, he doesn't know about it, and he has to. He's forced into Bimiyash. He'll never find his wallet ever again. He has to. He has no choice. He lost an object which has no simon. There's no way he'll ever find it again. It's forced upon him to be miyayish. And therefore, when it came to the finder's possession initially, it was meikara b'isur asliyadeh. Masha'en can hear, I know that my friend Reuven will like me to have the apple. When I find a lost object, I don't know whose object it is. He doesn't know who found it. There's no relationship between me and him. So he's just forced into saying, I'll never find it again. But had he known, he'd actually want the wallet. But my friend, had he known, he'd actually want me to have that apple. So therefore the Shach says, Hacha, Kevin Shiodeh Shietzratza, I know my friend Reuven will for sure want me to have the apple. Imkain, Hashanami Behatera Asliyadeh. Even now, it's come to your possession, Behatera. The Mistama, Eyo Makbudazet, my friend Reuven doesn't care about having me eat an apple in his refrigerator. And therefore the Shach is leaning towards saying it would be allowed to use a person's object as property if I know for sure he would be very comfortable and happy with me using this. Now this gets into an interesting discussion when it comes to how to paskin l'halacha. In general, there's never one rule that always sticks when it comes to paskin halacha. We don't always follow, you know, a bayi rava. There's always exceptions. We normally, when it comes to the Shach, we almost always follow the Shach. When it comes to Yoredeya. The Shach and Taz, the Taz doesn't really play a role in this discussion, but the Taz, the way it works where they set up the page of Gemara and Shulchan Aruch and Svarim that have Mefarshim on the outside, the inside parish is always the older one. Rashi is always on the inside column. He preceded Tosos, who's on the outside. So if you open up in a Yerideya, Taz is on the inside. Taz was older, and the Shachla is on the outside. The Shachla is much younger. Now, the way it goes, the story goes from the Gra, that the Taz was much older when he wrote the parish, and the Shach was very young. I seem to recall maybe early 20s when he wrote the parish and the Shach, which is incredible. So the Shach wrote his parish, and the Taz felt it wasn't really respectful of the Shach at such a young age to write a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch that the Taz already had provided a commentary on. So again, the way the story goes, I'm not saying this on my own, that the Gra says that the Taz, we pass like the Shach over the Taz. Why? Because there's a Gemara in Erevin that says that Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai had a machlokas for many, many years. We pass like Beis Hillel over Beis Shammai. Why? Because firstly, Beis Hillel, whenever he presented the machlokas between him and Beis Shammai, they always presented Beis Shammai's position first. Like, we're only Beis Hillel. This is Beis Shammai's shita first. And also, Beis Hillel, whenever they got disrespected, they didn't really care. They were okay. They were very humble. They were able to take the heat. They were a group of Tamidi Chachamim who were very, very humble. So when it comes to humility, that is really the essence of getting Psak Halacha. So the Gra says, since the Taz, not to say that Taz wasn't humble, but the Taz was very makbid that the Shach came along to add a parish, because he was makbid and was disturbed by that, we passing like the Shach over the Taz in general. That's just an interesting background that I heard from Rav Schechter, quote from the Vilna Gaon. So even though we normally pass like the Shach, here there are two reasons why not to pass like the Shach. Number one is, that he says, Elo Mistafina, had I not been so scared, that language already indicates that I'm not willing to pasken this way because Tosos already said something different. That's one. And number two is the Ktos himself, the Ktos HaChoshen, one of the most important achronim on Choshen Mishpat. He already says we can't pasken like the Shach because he goes against the Tosos. The Tosos says that a person may not use someone else's property even though you know he won't care. So even though the Shach wants to distinguish, the Shach cannot go up against Tosos, and therefore we assume you cannot use someone else's property unless you have been given explicit permission. But there is the Shita of the Machan Ephraim, which I know you didn't have a chance to see because they didn't have it in Bar Ilan, and I forgot to make copies of it. But the Machan Ephraim, in a very short piece here, he says that he thinks that the Shach is actually correct. How can the Shach be correct? How does he go against Tosos? If you want to have an Achron, be passionate like Achron, you need a Rishon who supports him. A Shach up against a Tosos, so he says the Rambam. He thinks the Rambam assumes like the Shach as well, that you are allowed to use someone else's property if you know for sure they won't be machped. What's the Rambam? So you tell me if you like this Raya or not. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Ishus. So, Kid Sheh Bedavar, you marry a woman, Bedavar She'ena Bahabai Smachped Alev. You're staying at Reuven's house, and you know he's not around, so you take an object of his, like you find a lovely woman. They had like a maestro going around the other day that a divorced couple had met each other at a wedding, and they decided to get remarried. So a bar mitzvah was it? So they at the bar mitzvah, a rabbi was Masada Kedushin, at the bar mitzvah they used whatever item they used, and they got married, they had a little chuppah at the bar mitzvah. Very nice. So
remarried, or there was a totally new couple?
Remarried. So that happened was, so sometimes people could get married without much of a context. So the guy borrowed someone's property without asking him. He borrowed some silver, some money. You don't need to use a ring. So he uses someone else's bedavar. Shane ba bais makbid alav. He used the owner's property that he wouldn't mind, but he didn't ask him. He go tomorrow, or egos, perhaps a nut, or a date he used to marry her. Hareza mikudeshes misafik. It's a suffix whether the kedushin works. Okay. Why is it a suffix? So the Machan Ephraim's understanding here is because he says when a person uses a person's property, it's not called gzela. When I take the date, it's mine. I know the Babais won't care. I own it. And how do you know I own it? Because as the Rambam in Hilchos Edo says that an artist, a sharecropper, that takes something, a little bit of the fruit that he's working in, even though he doesn't take from the property, he doesn't ask the owner, the farmer, he's working the land, he eats some fruit. It's not Eino Ganav, he's not called the Ganav. Vikashleidis, he could be an aid. Shein Balasade Machbulov, the Balasade doesn't care. So if you know that Balabais doesn't care whether you're a sharecropper or whether you're a guest in someone's house, that's not Gneva. So he says, we see from the Rambam clearly that borrowing something or using someone's property who's not makbid is allowed. So then the question becomes, so why is it only Suffolk Kedushin? Right? If it's really, I could use a Baal Bayis' property without permission, if he's not makbid, it should be a real Kedushin. So Machna Prime says, because it's not a real Kedushin, because we don't know the value of the date, we don't know the value of the egos, it's a suffix whether it's a Shavapruta or not a Shavapruta. The first mission Kedushin says, in order to perform Kedushin with Kesef, needs to be a Shavapruta. How much is a date worth? I don't know. Is a Shavapruta is a couple cents, maybe, not a lot. So that was a suffix according to the Machna Prime. So he tries proving from the Rambam that the Shach, in fact, is correct, that you can use someone's property if you know he won't be makbul. So this interesting discussion had a paskin halacha lemaisa. So one of the rayas they prove, yes?
It's really a question of, you said it's allowed if you get their permission. So the question is really, is that counted as permission when you know it? Isn't that the question?
The question is right now, if you know that they will like it, whether or not that's considered a permission right now. If you didn't get it, you know, that's the question, yeah. We don't know what he would say, but you know, where he's unaware of it now, but you know when he finds out he'll be okay with it, but right now you don't have that explicit permission. That's the question. So they bring a raya from our Gemara and Beitza, what we've been learning all week, the Gemara and Beitza, Chaf Chesmen and Aleph, about, the Gemara been talking about how Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Chia, got property that got some fruit from their fish, rather, from their father, Rebbe. And ended up being, the way it was split up, it wasn't even. It was 7-5 in terms of splitting the fish up. So the Gemara says that, is this to suggest, lememer dekapti hadade? The fact that they were measuring out the different amounts, does that mean they're makbid on who gets what? V'ha hanu shav benisa, wasn't there once 7 fish, das the bay Rebbe, that's made its way over to the house of Rebbe? V'shtake chamish minayo bay Rebbe Chia. Rebbe Chia ended up, the son, ended up taking back 5 on his own. But look up at Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon didn't mind. Rabbi Shimon had less than that. So we see clearly that they didn't mind each other. So the Gemara says, oh, it must not be Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Shimon. It must have been Rabbi Chia and someone else. Or Rabbi Shimon and someone else. 2 different parties. Fine. So what comes out from this is, they quote from this Sefer, the Tal Torah, that we see that even though they weren't machped on each other, if they asked each other, can I take 5, you take 3, whatever the numbers were, there's no Shiloh. They asked each other. It must be a situation where they didn't ask each other, and yet it was still allowed to take more than the other because they weren't machbid. So we understand that when there's understanding that the guy won't mind, it's completely allowed to take someone else's property. That's what the Tal Torah writes. He says, in Mikan Muchach Kedivri Ashach, Shemut Elito Gam Belo Rishus, Im Yodea Shacharkach Yitnu Lo Rishus. You could take it now if you know for certain that after the fact, when he finds out, he won't mind. Okay. Then he says maybe it's a situation where this was a recurring occurrence, where they knew about this, and there was some implicit understanding in the past, and, you know, like going to your parents' house, or going to a guest who oftentimes, going to a host where you oftentimes go to, in certain situations there's understanding. So it's not a riot to a regular case where you don't have some type of understanding. But Rav Zilberstein says that he doesn't think you're giving a riot from this Gemara. This Gemara about Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shmuel cannot be a raya that in general you could use someone else's property if you know after the fact he'll be happy. Why? Because he says the fish, it was the 2 brothers, Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shmuel. They were 2 brothers. Rabbi wasn't taking Rabbi Shmuel's fish. Rabbi Chia wasn't taking Rabbi Shmuel's fish. Whose fish was it? It was their father Rabbi's fish. So I wasn't borrowing Rabbi, I wasn't taking Rabbi Shmuel's property, I was taking Rabbi, the father's property. That's it. Rebbe certainly didn't mind. Taking my father's property is fine. But taking even your own brother's property, that wasn't his. Even if he was machbid on it, that wouldn't make a difference because it wasn't Rebbe Shmuel's in the first place. The way he writes this is that when it comes to the fish in the Gemara Beitza, it was Shaychem the Rebbe. Who machzik on the man bottom? And he was bringing them home for his children. Vim Rebbe Chia not the chamesh, and if Rebbe Chia took, ain't the nechshev shalakach, is the way he didn't take it away from Rebbe. Hakpeta was only rak from Rabbi Shimon, his brother, but it wasn't Rabbi Shimon's fish; it was Rabbi's fish, and therefore it's not a congruous situation to compare to a situation whereby I'm taking Reuven's property directly, and therefore there is no raya. Halacha lemaisa, what a person should do, of course, is you should be machmir and not to use someone's property without having explicit rishus. That's what comes out in the end of the day. But let's move on now to a situation of using someone's object for davar mitzvah. And that's a tour in Shulchan Aruch.
Just very quickly, is chazaka ever come up in these discussions?
It's a good point. I would imagine, I think a very good point. I would imagine that if a person, I'm not sure if you need a chazaka even, but let's say a person on three different occasions he let you have his property, it's probably safe to assume that's enough of a permission to allow you to move forward, but I don't know for sure. I think it's a good question. I don't know.
And did we ever cover perishable items? If the thing is going to rot anyway, does that give me rishus?
Right. Also a good question. Not sure. It's a machlok when it comes to Hashavas Aveda. Let's say I have a property, I found the lost object, and it's perishable. So there's a discussion, what should I do at that point? So one day the Mishnah says, we should sell it, so it doesn't go bad, and have money instead. Money obviously stays. And the other opinion says, don't sell, leave it as is, because a person rather one kav of his own fruit than 10 kav of someone else's fruit. So even though it might go bad, he rather what he put his effort and work into. So based on that, price, I don't know how we pass in that halacha, that would be a good place to look, though. It's a good question. It's a good question. The Gabi Bracha, a person should not say Bracha. I'm remembering that now. There's a discussion about saying a Bracha on something. A person has such trey food. Let's say, what do you do if a person needs it? It's a chola. I got a question yesterday. A person, everyone's going crazy about this coronavirus. So some lady sent me pictures of this type of zinc based candy. She needs it for the immune system and stuff like that. There's no kashrus for it, and they said the number one thing you have to get is zinc, and I looked on Amazon, it's $500. I found it here, it's much cheaper, it's the immune system going nuts, I have it. So I said, listen, I can send it to the OU to find out about it, but I said, okay, I'm waiting here in the store to tell me. I said, it takes me some time to hear back from that. I can't guarantee that, but I said on the CRC website, it says these companies, that they say if you're sick, you could have it. I don't know what illness you have, but I only know these things. Okay, well, this is the same product because it also has zinc, so it means I could buy this as well because of the coronavirus. Everyone's sick. So I said, no. Just because the CRC approves these type, it's not the zinc that's kosher or not kosher. Zinc is fine. It's the flavoring that's a problem. So CRC says the one I told you was fine. The one that you're buying may not be fine because CRC doesn't approve it. There might be treif in there. I don't know what you have. I don't know if you're sick. If you are sick, the doctor says you need to have the zinc, so then it's pikuach nefesh. If you're not so sick, then you feel like you're getting sick, so maybe you could have it wrapped around in like tissue paper so you don't taste it if you really feel a need. But then I only realized afterwards she was getting all crazy because of coronavirus. I didn't want to, when it comes to people's anxiety, I didn't want to start messing with that. So she said she's going to hold off until I hear back from the OU. But the person has to, because medicinal reasons, has to have treif. And I got a child just a couple of days ago, a baby. Oftentimes they have, they can't. That was actually a Dr. Smy's patient, now that we could talk about many patients. But they said that they can't, the child wasn't able to stomach the milk, the formula. So there's certain formulas that are based on, that are treif, that some have, I don't know if they still have this, but they have, I forget which animal. But some animal, pig? There are some other weird animal, maybe squid. You ever hear squid? Yeah, I had a friend who used to have to give their child like squid milk or something like that. It's not, squids don't have milk, but like in the milk formula had some squid something in it. So obviously, if the child needs it to grow and it's for the growth of it, if there's no other option, then one should give the child that squid-based or pig-based formula if that's what the doctor says is what they need to grow. But let's say if an adult or a child who needs to have something that's not kosher. It's for his health. Would one say a bracha or not say a bracha? That's a shaila. It's a davar iser. But the discussion in the posting, I believe that we paskin, if they need it, you should say a bracha on this. But if a person feels like he's so uncomfortable to say a bracha on a davar treif, then he wouldn't say a bracha. There's an incredible meiser of Shechter shared with me maybe last year. And anyone knows of Shechter, he oftentimes cries. So he was sharing with me and a couple other individuals. He met a person in NCSY Kolo last summer, 2 summers ago. And the person grew up in a non-religious home, but he somehow became frum. And his parents refused to buy him kosher meat and kosher food. So he was a kid. He ate whatever his parents gave him, but he knew it was wrong. He had no choice. So he washed it every single meal because he didn't want to say bracha on non-kosher food. So he washed on kosher bread, and every meal he went washed and had a motzi, so the bracha would be on the bread, so he wouldn't have to say bracha on the tray food. Imagine that. So mamish mesiras nefesh, such a person. To live like that. Anyways, so regarding your question, I don't recall about, that's when we talk about a iser of machal sasurus, that it's inherently usser, treif and chazer. When it comes to an iser gezela, I don't know if that would tell a person he shouldn't say a bracha on it. Obviously, the wrong thing to do. But let's say the guy said, I'm eating it anyways. I'm eating the davar iser that's been stolen. Do I say a bracha or not? I'm inclined to say that there would be a bracha in that case. But I don't remember it. So I don't remember how he passed it. Now, in terms of the distinction between Zanena and Lo Sigzal, I don't know if that would affect the question of the bracha or not, though. It would affect that there is a, now you remind me of this whole discussion, the Gemara Baba Kama, which talks about Zanena and Lochaser, there is a machlok Rishonim. If I'm Mahana from you, is that a Lo Sigzal Isser, or it's simply it's an issue of Mazik, your property? That's part of the question, the Rishonim, how to categorize a Zanena as a Lochaser. Okay. Where were we? Okay, back to mitzvos now. So we're running out of time, so really not much time here, but I guess I'll say quickly, the Shulchan Aruch passing is that a person can use a person's property when it comes to a davar mitzvah, because a person is happy to have his property used for a mitzvah. Some achronim say, not only do I help him as a chesed, but also I have a certain chelek of the mitzvah as well. There's a certain fulfillment of mitzvahs that I get for helping a person perform the mitzvah. So the other day, a guy actually borrowed my tefillin, so I have a certain chelik of wearing tefillin when he wears my actual tefillin. So people actually like that. So based on this, the Shulchan Aruch says that one can borrow someone's mitzvah, but as long as you fold it up properly, as long as it's something that won't get ruined, like svarim used to get ruined, nowadays svarim either don't get ruined or they're not so expensive anymore, so people, for the most part, are very accepting for people to use them. Certainly, if you have svarim lying around the base medrash, they certainly allow for that, because if you leave it around the base medrash, there's a certain understanding that people are able to benefit and use from it. So a person has to use their seichel, which types of mitzvahs a person should be using or not using when borrowing without any permission. We'll finish with this, a fascinating tshuvas of emotion, if you got a chance to see it, using a child, the mitzvah or esrog of a lulav of a child. So the Gemara says in Sukkah that although a child is able to acquire things, a child cannot be machna things over. He doesn't know how to give things. He doesn't know how to share. Children take things. They don't know how to share properly. So what's a din? Can you borrow a child's lulav esrog? In essence, he has no das. So wouldn't that be a violation of shol shalomi das, which we start off by saying that's a gazela? So would that be allowed? So Rav Moshe proves it has to be allowed, firstly. Why does it have to be allowed? Because the din is that if you only have one lulav and esrog in your house, and you want your child to perform the mitzvah of a dal minim, he has to own it on the first day. Kachtem lachem ba yom arishon. So I use it, I shake it first thing in the morning, I give it to my child, so now he owns it, so he could use it. Now, how do I get it back from him? I can't acquire it back, because the Gemara says he doesn't know how to give things away. But how do I at least borrow it from him? For day two I need it, how am I shoal from him? Isn't it shol shlomi das? He says it's okay. But we just said, a katan has no das. So if there's no das to a katan, it's shol shlomi das, that's gzela. So I can never use it on day two, day three. So the Ramosha says it must be allowed, you could borrow things from a katan. How does it work? So what Ramosha says is, even though a child can't give things away, it still won't be considered gneva anymore. It won't be gneva. And he can lend things out. And based on that, Ramosha paskind that you would be allowed to borrow things from a child. But even that being the case, obviously a person has to use common sense, as our Mishnah Berurah points out, when borrowing a person's item for davar mitzvah, obviously you have to take care of it and make sure nothing's ruined. If the guy is standing there, you should obviously ask the individual, not just take the tefillin right in front of his face, and use your common sense as it comes through. But of course, when it comes to using someone's property, when it's not for davar mitzvah, their person should always be makbid like the Tosfos and Bava Metzia, and always ask permission first. Okay, next we got